Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. This is Lee Cantor. I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton and our producer, Kevin Finn. Welcome, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Thanks for having us back.
All right, Stone, you know, me and you decided not to go to this big startup bash, and we sent Kevin our roving reporter. So, Kevin, report on what happened Tuesday night.
It was really cool. It was like the big startup Christmas party for all the guys getting into the business. They had the Marines there for Toys for Tots, so Everyone donated gifts, or most people did. It was fun. We just ate, drank, and we talked to a lot of new businesses. We met with our friends from Triplingo. So,
oh, nice. We saw them just, we were at Hippopotamus, saw them there.
Yeah, one of the guys I graduated with actually is working for them now, so I ran into him. And cool. I never remember his name ever, so.
And anybody else? You saw Lynn?
Lynn was there, Larry White. It was a good time. All the big wigs.
And then how many people were there? Is it hundreds?
I'd say like a couple hundred at least. And there was a nice, huge Christmas tree. It was actually real. It was just a lot of fun. Really good event over there at City Hall. So you guys should come next year. There weren't just young people like you guys were scared about.
And everybody was asking, where's Lee, where's Stone?
That's
right?
What they did.
Nobody mentioned us, did they?
Larry did.
Exactly.
So we had a fun startup visit in the middle of the week. We went out to Hippopotamus down at it's in that Biltmore building. That was way cool.
Right, in the Biltmore Hotel in the arcade area. They are Heath. Well, I don't remember.
There's no real arcade there, just a heads up. There were no pinball machines.
No ski ball.
Right.
But Heath has a startup that's called National Builder Supply, and he is hosting all these startups for free. They can have space in this co-working space in the Biltmore Hotel.
That was really cool.
So there's a handful there. Triplingo's there. Badgie's there.
I'm loving the whole startup thing. We're gonna do a remote broadcast for Startup Riot in February. Does that sound about right?
That sounds
and
perfect.
And maybe we'll try to get in on those fireside chats that they're doing at Hippopotamus.
There you go. But none of it can compare to what we're going to have this morning. This is going to be a fantastic show. A little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from Mr. Meekins and find out what's going on in his world. We're also going to get a chance to visit with Gary Marshall with Pop Dynamics. And we're going to get a chance to talk with the folks. You know, I asked how to pronounce their names, but not how to pronounce the name of this outfit. ASEC? ISEC.
Close.
So our lineup today, though, we're going to open the show. At the top of the show, we are going to have, with Pop Dynamics, Mr. Gary Marshall. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
So now, Pop Dynamics, what exactly is that?
So it's actually POP Dynamics. It stands for Point of Purchase.
See, it's easier to say POP.
It is easier.
I think we've established that.
Exactly. You're welcome.
Yeah, and most people do say POP, but it is an acronym. And POP Dynamics is a new, innovative outdoor advertising company that has a proprietary product called PromoPoles.
PromoPoles. So what is that?
And PromoPoles is a patent-pending 360-degree billboard that wraps around light poles in commercial parking lots.
Oh, so now you're taking something that's in every commercial parking lot, and then you're trying to make it more usable and functional. And are people trying this out? Is it actually in the market, or is it just something that you're working on?
We are a startup company, and we're about a year and a half into it, and we're two-sided marketing. So part of
360 degree two-sided. Yeah. I like
that's it.
So, you got everything covered.
So part of what we do and what we've actually spent the most time on thus far is targeting property owners, commercial property owners, typically big REITs, real estate investment trusts that have, hundreds, maybe thousands of properties. And then we contract with them and share revenue from the revenue generated by the advertiser being on their property.
You got something that could wrap around the microphone poles?
Oh, absolutely.
Look, for him, you're looking at everything as a place to put an ad, right?
That's right.
So are the REITs open to this? I would think that this is it's just free money for them.
Sure, and that's exactly what it is, and that's how we pitch it. It is a win-win situation. Obviously, the advertisers are able to, advertise right there at the point of purchase, and, instead of just that static traditional billboard that's on the side of the road, they're actually bringing it to where it becomes all of a sudden much more relevant and much more purpose-driven and actually in a much more, you know, non-threatening, casual environment.
Right.
So, yeah, we've got a couple REITs on board. You know, we actually just did a pilot program with the country's largest retail property owner in the country. I can't say their name, but guess you guys can probably imagine who that might be.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, was very successful with that. And we're looking to, after the holidays, do a couple more pilot programs and then hopefully get into revenue.
Now, so, when they're doing a pilot program, what are they looking at? As like you're just testing awareness if people saw the ad and you're polling them? How are you kind of proving that this is effective?
Sure. Well, the properties are looking at a few different things as well as we are. And, of course, the advertiser, you know, is the third part of this. What the property looks for is the tenant reaction, you know, when the advertisers are on their property. For this past pilot we just did, it was with Road Atlanta right before their big end-of-the-year race. And so while Road Atlanta wasn't, you know, a tenant in that complex,
right.
It was, you know, a way for us to in the property to gauge, you know, the reaction of their tenants to
right.
see if anyone would have any issues with that. And then the other part of it is the statistics, you know, to see, you know, how many people looked at it and, you know, what kind of response and reaction it received from the audience, you know, the consumers pulling up to shop.
Right.
So the tenants, maybe they would be, how did they react, first of all? Were they positive? Were they negative? Or you had some mixed reaction from the tenants?
Well, we actually got no negative reactions from them, and as far as we know, and of course that's more on the property side of things, but as far as we know, there have been no negative connotations coming from it.
Well, right. There you go, because I was going to say, if you do, one of the things you could do possibly is put tenant advertisements in there as well.
Right, and then that'll get them to shut up. You know how it's, you invite your neighbor to your party so they don't
sure.
so that they don't call the cops on you.
Sure, and that's actually one of our that's actually one of our target advertisers. You know, uh-huh. we want to really give the tenants who are already on the property, you know, sort of the first call, you know, of action
right.
to be able to get on those polls. But if they don't, of course, you know, we go to outside advertisers as well.
Now, I saw on your website that you're using a distributorship model.
We actually started out as more of a distributor model, and we've sort of evolved, and we actually have a new updated website that we just haven't, you know, made
Launch
live
it.
Yet. Correct. So we have evolved, and while initially we wanted to be an exclusive supplier, because it is a proprietary product.
Right. Yeah, it's patented.
It is, yes. And, you know, we felt like, well, we can just be an exclusive supplier, and, you know, we were actually able to market to a lot of distributors, and they got it very excited about it, and they could in turn get their clients excited about it.
Right.
But what we found is a lot of their clients didn't own property. Or they didn't even control their own property. They didn't have a place to put it.
Right.
So that's where we sort of shifted our focus
and
to
went
the
right
properties.
To the, who owns the property?
Correct.
And just go right to them.
So what is this thing made of? I mean, the infrastructure is the pole that already exists, but is this a vinyl banner? Is it painted on? What's it made of?
Yeah, it's actually a two-part system. So it's a top and then a wrap. And the way it was professionally engineered and designed is so that it could be self-installed. So, like, if McDonald's orders these and puts them around their fast food restaurant, you know, the guy who goes out, or the gal who goes out and sweeps, you know, the parking lot and, you know, maybe puts up the signs and what have you, they can actually go out there and self-install this in less than 2 minutes.
Even a radio producer could do that.
Even a radio producer, that's right.
Now, because I guess it would have to be of the right size, because aren't all the poles slightly different? Like, they're not just a standard kind of pole, is there?
Sure. Well, they're about 95% of the poles in the U.S. are standard.
Uh-huh.
They're 24-inch bases. You know, it's a standard 8-inch pole or what have you. That's not really my side of the business, mm-hmm. but there are some variations, and with that, we actually do a site survey before we actually, you know, ever print anything or install
sure.
it. So we're making sure that we're getting the right measurements and all, so we can produce the right product to go on that pole.
And they hold up, these things hold up to the weather pretty well?
Absolutely. We've actually done very thorough testing, and what we've found is we can guarantee these things for up to 6 months. Not to say they couldn't last even longer than that, but after about a year, you know, the graphics do start breaking down a bit. So that's something that, you know, we do take into account. The other part of it is these weren't really designed to stay up for long periods of time. It's the idea is, you know, as advertisers and companies' campaigns change out, we change these wraps out to fit their campaigns. So it's typically every 30, 60, 90 days that a company is going to want to change these wraps.
I was thinking keg party. If at school we'd have had these, we'd have filled up the keg party in a heartbeat.
I'm sure. Right.
But you don't, but that's a balance, so you don't want to change them out every month, right? You want them to be around 6 months for every change? Or
Well, ideally, we'd love to change them out every month.
Oh.
Yeah, that would be the thing. Because, you know, eventually, after a while, people... You know, the audience is going to get sick of looking at the same thing. And once they've seen it once, they're probably not going to continue looking right. at it. So we want it to be able to attract and draw attention all the time. And with that, you know, changing out the graphics to something that's new and something that's fresh and something that's relative to whatever time period it is, maybe seasonal or what have you, that's real important.
Right. I guess that does make sense in that. So you want it to be less of branding and more of a call to action.
Correct. And one of the ways we do that is we actually integrate mobile marketing into it. So we have the QR codes and the text keywords, mm-hmm. the call to action integrated into the graphics.
Okay, so like then the sign could be like, go into, you know, Jason's Deli and save X. Right, so it's something that's more actionable.
But you got to do something off of the thing that's on the pole for that to happen for you. So
right, like text something and to Jason's Deli and get something, so it's all integrated.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the call to action, is so that the audience is actually, you know, taking a step in order to receive an incentive, and whether it's, you know, scanning that QR code or texting that keyword, and then they get a response, and maybe that response either drives them to social media sites or maybe a mobile marketing site, or maybe it's just a coupon. There's all different.
Right, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with a little creativity, right. It can go a long ways.
Oh, yeah, and here's what's going to happen. Lamar, all these outdoor advertising, first they're going to try to block you from getting your patent. They're going to lose that. Yeah. Then they're going to want to buy you.
Sure.
Right?
That's the idea.
Because, I mean, no, look, because at the big billboard, you can't hold your phone up going 45 right. miles an hour to do the QR right. code thingy.
Well, and the other part of it is big billboards are limited. You know, in order to place a billboard, I mean, there are so many restrictions and going through zoning, and it's just a very intensive process, not to mention the money that it costs to actually construct those. So with us, we're just taking an unused asset, right. you know, right there at the point of purchase, which has, you know, a ton of relevance, and we're creating, you know, we're turning that into a revenue-generating asset.
Now, can you, right now, the POP... What's it called? Promo POP device?
POP Dynamics is the company, and Promo right. Poles is the product.
Promo Pole is at the bottom. It doesn't have to be at the bottom.
Absolutely not. And that's a good point. We're actually in the final stages of testing and about to launch a new version of Promo Poles, which is an elevated version. So that means, you know, we've heard from some of our advertisers, well, what if, you know, cars are parked around and
right.
you know, although,
they may not see it.
Although they stand up about 4 foot tall is the standard size. If there's a lot of traffic, then there's a good chance that they might not be seen,
right.
although they're very vibrant, what have you. So we have created a new product that we're about to officially launch into the marketplace, the elevated version of Promo Poles, and that can go up the pole and obviously creates a lot more exposure for the advertiser.
Now, once you go up the pole, now you're talking, this is a different ballgame. Now you can send a message where, like, each pole could be a few words of a message as they escort themselves into the...
And you can charge more the higher you go up to a point. Like the premium spot's in the middle, right? And it's a little less expensive down right. low or way up high.
Sure. And that's a good point. That's something that we considered is how to price it, because that's how billboards are priced.
Right.
They're, you know, the higher traffic areas, you know, generate more revenue than some of the lower traffic areas. And so just getting into the marketplace, we decided to really simplify the process. So we actually just charge a standard rate.
One rate.
Right. And not to say that we won't eventually move towards right. that area, but right now we just really want to keep it simple for our advertisers and really give them a great deal, because it is a lot less expensive than going out and trying to purchase a traditional billboard.
Right. Now, if someone's an advertiser, how would they even... Like, because you're not out yet, like, what comes first? I guess you have to have the spots before you get the advertisers, or you're...
Sure. And we do have, right now, under contract, a couple thousand poles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all over the country. So the idea is that we continue to build our property portfolio.
Right.
But also for those advertisers who might own their property or, you know, control their property. They're the anchor store or they're the standalone. Right. Tenant, you know, and those folks are really who we're marketing to right now until we do have a larger property portfolio.
So what do you want and need most then? You, right now you want more advertisers?
Properties
is what you want.
Well, we're sort of two-sided once again. We, you know, that's actually a lot of what I focus on is the property side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also have a chief of sales who focuses on the advertising side. And we have a few reps as well. And so we're trying to get into revenue. We've just sort of shifted our focus to the advertisers within the last couple months. But we're also continually trying to build that portfolio of properties, because the more properties we have, the more attractive we are to the advertisers who don't necessarily own their property.
Now, what's the ideal profile for an advertiser for you?
You know, obviously someone who already spends money on billboards.
Right.
You know, or someone who, you know, maybe has spent money in the past on billboards but aren't real happy with that.
The results, right.
Or someone who just wants to be right there at the point of purchase.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different facets, you know, when you look at what an ideal advertiser is. But basically, you know, anyone who wants a new, innovative advertising solution in the outdoor space.
So you mentioned that you're a startup. Do you need money, too? You need capital, or are you set?
Absolutely. How much do you have on you right now,
Stan? I don't know. Maybe we should talk. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Right?
Yeah. You know,
it's funny. I was actually at the Tuesday event that Kevin was just talking about, and I'm actually part of the Ritz group.
The Ritz group?
You know, part of their capital community group. And although we haven't actively really seeked out capital, it is something that we do, you know, keep in our back pocket, so to speak, and it's something that, you know, eventually, you know, once we are into revenue and once we, you know, have a proof of concept, you know, and have some numbers, then, you know, that might be a direction that we'll head down.
Sure. Well, what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and have a conversation on any of these fronts?
Sure. Well, you can check out our website. It's POP, like point of purchase, dynamics with an S, .com. And right there, there's a, you know, a contact us. You can fill out a few spaces and it'll go right to us and we'll get back with you. Otherwise, you can also call. Our main number is 866-778-2939, and I'm at extension 150.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming and visiting with us this morning, man.
And thank when you work on those mini pole things that can fit on our mic stands, we'll be all over that.
That's all right. Well, I think it might be fun to have him come back with maybe one of your local REIT clients or advertisers and kind of get a story from their perspective. I think it'd be a cool follow-up interview. You'd be up for something like that?
Absolutely. We actually just signed a big REIT here in town, so
yeah?
You know, we can talk with them and see if they'd be up to it.
Yeah, I think that might be fun. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Great, love to.
All right. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Yulia Bila. I'm getting nods. Like I got, and I'm in the neighborhood with that. And Ayaka Matsumura.
Yes, sir.
Close. And they are with an outfit called ISEC. And my very special booking agent, Katie Payton, helped me put this thing together. And these folks are in the intern arena. And so I'm really looking forward to this because, among other things that we could really start exploring going into 2013 right here at Business Radio X, is we could probably use some intern support. It's at least worth learning about.
Exactly.
So welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
And you're affiliated, the two of you are affiliated with the University of Georgia over in Athens. Is that accurate?
Yes, we are. So ISEC operates out of universities. We're in, I think, over 4,000 universities across the world in 113 countries and territories now. And we're out of the UGA chapter.
And the internship world, I mean, that's kind of a crowded space. You're not the only game in town, right? So what are you guys, how are you guys different than maybe some of your more traditional intern avenues, intern partnerships?
Right. So we are actually quite a bit different. The idea is that we're international internship exchange organization. And we were founded actually after World War II by a collection of young students from the Benelux countries, Germany and France. And I believe Sweden also was involved. And all these students got together and they saw what had happened after World War II, and they knew that they needed to understand each other better in order to prevent those kinds of atrocities from reoccurring. And so they started basically sending each other to each other's countries. They started this very pilot version of an exchange program. And it's grown to about, 30,000 exchanges now globally?
And we have 100 plus interns in the United States right now. So
wow.
So now, an exchange, does that mean, like, if I get one of the interns from your group, I got to, like, send Kevin over to another country in exchange?
I kind of like that plan. That sounds like it has some problems.
So
as long as
work.
Kevin's okay with that. So the way that it works is that every local chapter has to have a minimum number of incoming and outgoing exchanges in order to remain like a viable part of the network.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be the same people. It used to be in the 60s and the 70s that if you were to send three abroad, you had to bring three in.
Right.
But now, like at the University of Georgia, for example, we send about 30 abroad. We're looking to do about 50 to 60 next year. And then we have brought 2 to 10 because it is significantly more difficult to sign contracts with businesses in the local area than it is to get students to it's easier to
travel,
market to students
right.
than it is to businesses, at least for us.
So what's your value proposition to the business?
We offer reception services and administrative support, and we have a relationship with the State Department. So we offer a J-1 visa and health insurance for the incoming.
So you're able to navigate that whole terrain, make it much smoother. We don't have to know how to do all that stuff.
Yes, yeah, sir. Basically all that the business has to do is come up with a training plan for the individual to make sure that it is a substantive like experience
so
for
it's
that
worth
person.
Their time to travel around the globe
right,
to come here, right?
So that it is worth their time to come here and to have this experience so that they learn something from it, develop themselves in some way, and we basically take care of the rest. So we pick them up at the airport. We set them up with housing.
Oh, I don't have to put them in Lee's penthouse?
I mean, if Lee wants to be a host.
So you're looking for a host too?
That's not necessary? It's not
necessary.
We typically put them up in their own apartments. But that's something that we're interested in expanding into a little bit because we find that in a host family, you get a much more of a
They get a richer
process.
Kind of understand the culture a little bit and get more immersed into the wherever
yeah, exactly.
they are. Exactly. Now, so what does that look like for the business? Do they have to write the check for their housing, for all that stuff?
No, you would sign a contract with ISIC UGA,
mm-hmm.
and then you would pay them a salary.
So you pay the intern a salary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And is there like a range, or do you pay them what you would pay somebody here? How does that, or
you
is
would,
that negotiated
you would pay
each
them,
time?
Yeah, so it is negotiated each time, depending on what the business needs and what the...
But I could probably get them cheaper than Kevin, right? This is what I'm learning here.
This is true. they tend to be a lot more cost
Man.
Effective. Yeah.
Remember when we had a guy named Kevin who used to work here? So now how long is an internship typically? Is it a semester? Does it go by semester? Is it over the breaks or like summer and the holidays? Like when does the intern come and for how long?
It ranges from 3 months to about 18 months, depending on the internships. So that also changes the price range, depending on how long you're here. And it can be any time of the year. It can be in the summer. That's when it's most popular. But we just had two interns come into the University of Georgia, and they just left. So
it could be a relatively short-term commitment. If we wanted somebody through a semester or summer or spring or whatever, it's not like you have to jump off a cliff and dedicate $50,000 to get the intern. You can probably pay a modest salary, set up a good training program. A company like ours give them a lot of different exposure. Now, there's probably some fee to you guys, too, right? Is there some upfront thing for
management? Yeah, like who funds you guys?
Yeah, so we're actually a nonprofit organization, and all the money that we get goes into, the visa.
That pays for the housing and all that other stuff?
And the gas to go pick up the intern if we were to take them on a trip somewhere, that kind of thing. But the contracts range from $2,000 to $4,000, total. So 2 would be the shortest term, and then 4 would be for the 18 months. So it obviously becomes a lot more cost effective the longer the intern stays here.
Got it. Okay, so let's walk this thing through. Lee strokes a check for $2,000, and then we sit down and try to explain to you what kind of person we would want to fill that post, and where your guys' expertise and experience comes in is you help us identify some candidates that we might. Do we get a chance to interview them, or you do all the vetting, or just walk us through that engagement, if you will? This really intrigues me.
Sure. So we begin with a contacting phase. So we meet an initial meeting, and then we follow up. And then after that, we will start sourcing. So we can do that, and you can also look at the applications and the people available.
Are you going on like Craigslist in Sweden to find this person? Like where are you finding that?
We actually have a ISIC is broken down at the local level, but also at the national and international level.
Uh-huh.
So the international I guess, branch is based out of the Netherlands, and they run basically an exchange like database. And so when an intern pays to go on this experience in the U.S., it would be $700 total. So they pay to go on this experience, and then that gets them onto the database, and they're able to search through internships.
And they can find one that matches what they're interested in.
Right. And so they fill out like a profile of exactly like where they want to go, what their skill sets are, where they'd be able to contribute the most. And then on the incoming side here, we would be able to search that database, come up with a list of, 15, probably narrowed down to 3 to 4 to have the actual company interview. And then if you guys aren't satisfied with that, then we can expand farther.
Have either of you done this?
I have not, but I think I want to over the summer.
Have you done it?
Have we gone abroad or have we
abroad?
Sourced?
Have you gone abroad?
No, actually. I went abroad with ISIC to an international conference. So I was in Romania in October for a week and a half, and I was setting up some partnerships with the Hungarians, Romanians, the Ukrainian delegation. There was about 40 different countries represented there. And so we were just setting up like what kind of markets, like what kind of students do we tend to have, what kind of internships do we tend to have, and seeing if we can form any.
So this is a job for you? This is your job?
No, we work as students full time.
So you're a student at UGA, and this is your break now, right?
Right. Yes.
And so, but you're
spending it with us.
That's nice. They're probably on the radio a lot, right? So, but your relationship with the organization, that's a job or that's volunteer?
I mean,
it's volunteer.
Technically we're volunteers. I like to put this on my resume as an internship because it's very, very intensive.
Right.
I'll bet.
But we're basically our own boss. Like, so Ayaka is the director of business development. And then I'm the president for 2013. And the only people we really have above us is the national staff, but they're more of like a supporting body. So we get to kind of run our programs however we'd like, as long as we don't break any rules. And
so what are your initiatives for 2013? Are you trying to get more of the UGA people involved in this to go abroad?
Yeah, so we're on my vice president of outgoing exchange actually wants to send 100 people abroad, which would be kind of a huge jump from 30 to 100.
Wow, yeah.
Okay.
And I think she can do it. I'm very confident about 50, which is the number we put into our budget. but I think she could make it up to maybe 75, 80. And then on the incoming side, we want to bring 16 interns to the U.S.
And then, so now, in order to get 16 people to come here, you have to find businesses here that will host them.
Right.
Now this is obviously part of that initiative. You're getting the word out to let business people know. So now any type of businesses that work better than others?
We are focusing on logistics and IT companies, but it's not limited to that. We also have internships in business, marketing,
radio, maybe.
Radio. There's a lot of Swedish radio hosts that want to come here.
And so are you all set and you're stocked up on these companies, or you could use some more companies that are interested?
More the merrier.
The more the merrier, the more to choose from. And let's give the interns, would-be interns that are coming over or going out from here and over, a little bit of counsel. What are some things that they can do when they're in to position themselves and put themselves in the absolute best light and have the best chance of success and securing a slot in this program and having someone actually choose them?
So the interns from abroad or the interns from UGA?
I'd be interested to hear either one, because I think it would be good counsel for them to get that perspective, because you guys, you know this stuff inside and out. So, yeah, let's attack both.
Okay, so for students going from UGA to internships abroad, in other countries, we actually have so here we have a global internship program, which is has to be paid internship because of the way that visa works. In other countries, they're able to have volunteer internships as well. And so what we do a lot is we'll send people to teach English or to talk about HIV/AIDS awareness in schools or to do sustainability projects, that kind of thing. Or they can go on the global internship program abroad as well. So it just really depends. The more volunteer-based internships are typically for younger students, because older students, people like with master's degrees, et cetera, aren't necessarily interested in that anymore. But it's so. First off, you have to choose a program and decide if you're right for it. If you're, a sophomore trying to do a summer, you probably are not going to get to work with Microsoft in Germany. It's just not going to happen.
So be smart about what you're declaring your interest in. Is that
right? You have to be smart and realistic, and on top of that, flexible as well, because we do have a database. We have 113 countries and territories that we're technically in, but they're not necessarily exactly the kind of opportunity that you're looking for in every country. So if you really want to teach English somewhere, that's awesome. We can put you just about anywhere except like Canada for obvious reasons. But if you really want to do marketing, for example, we can't really send you on a marketing internship to like Belize. Or we can't really send you to do HIV/AIDS awareness in London. You know, that kind of thing. So
you got to watch out for the people who just want like a vacation.
Yeah, you have to watch out for those people. You have to watch out for people who kind of want a very structured environment. So a lot of the time people say that we compete with Study Abroad, but I don't think that's true because Study Abroad is much more structured. You kind of have like a schedule that you follow. You have classes that you have to go to. With this, it's a lot more fluid. You're going to be like taken care of by the ISIC community there, but you're not going to have necessarily like faculty advisors or anyone
right,
telling
that are
you what
kind of
do.
Micromanaging.
Right. So it's a much more independent experience, and not
so
everyone
the person's
got to
be kind of be mature.
Mm-hmm.
Now you said there was just a handful of people that came last year.
From UGA, we had two.
Two. So what did they do? Where did they land?
They were working at a nonprofit actually in Athens called the Athens Center for Latino, what was it, Latino Development?
Center.
It's called, the acronym is ALSIS, and they were helping to run some marketing programs, like run their website and do that kind of thing.
So then they were Spanish speaking?
One was Spanish speaking and one was from Brazil. Mm-hmm. So Spanish and Portuguese.
So do the person that comes into this country, they have to know English? That's a plus, unless mm-hmm. the organization is of whatever the language is?
So the official language of ISIC is English.
Uh-huh.
And so everyone, even to be a member of ISIC, to be able to run these programs, you have to speak English nearly fluently. And that's something that was actually really cool when I was in Cluj in Romania. All of the sessions were run in English. And you would see, like, on the PowerPoint slide, there would be, like, some, like, minor grammatical things. But besides that, I was so impressed with the level of English that these students have from all over the world.
Right.
And they were, especially, like, the Northern Europeans, they had really, really great accents. I think a lot, mm-hmm. they watch a lot of How I Met Your Mother, honestly. That's probably all that it is, because you can't learn that in school. Like, some of the, just, like, the jargon that they were able to throw out that, you know, we use in daily life.
Right. Now, see, there's a practical tip. You should put that in your prep brochure for people abroad. Coming over here, watch How I Met Your Mother for 6 months before you even come over.
Get a Netflix subscription.
There you go.
Right.
So what's next for you two? Is there a term of time? There's a horizon, and when you're done with that, you're on to the next thing? Or what's happening with you guys in the coming months?
Yeah, so we're actually starting our terms in January. Our terms run from January 1st to December 31st. So this is kind of our first initiative as an incoming exec board.
Oh, cool.
Are you seniors? You're both seniors?
I'm a sophomore. And
I'm a junior. And then after this, you technically are not allowed to stay in the same position for more than a year because it's supposed to be, even if you're not going on exchange, you're supposed to be kind of growing and developing, learning new things all the time. And so if you guys want to have someone come at talk it on the radio next year, probably won't be us. Because we like to give that experience to as many people as possible. So I'm not sure what we'll be doing next year. I'm going to graduate, so maybe Ayaka will stick around and do my job.
Definitely.
So what might be fun, if we ever made our way to Athens or if they had like a field trip here, is to have the intern candidates come on the radio and like let them do like a radio resume or something. Like we ask them about what they want to do. Well, that could be that might be fun.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So how many people are in the group there in Athens?
So we have about 45 right now.
45? Wow.
And then that's a six board of six people, or a six board, an exec board of six people, and then two directors. So that would be Ayaka and her colleague, Alina.
So you have no, like, the staff of UGA, they're not involved in this? You guys are just running the show?
Student run.
What
I mean,
story.
We're technically under International Student Life, and we have an office out of that building. It's Memorial Hall at UGA. But they don't really, I think they provide us with like $150 per semester, and we're operating at a budget of about $40,000. So that's really not very much. So yeah, we get to kind of call our own shots, which is really cool.
Yeah,
basically
that's a great opportunity.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, as an undergrad, you basically get to like run your own business.
Right, yeah, that's fantastic.
All right, so let's make sure our listeners know how to reach out and get more information, website, contact info.
Right, if you're a business
info.
Owner that are interested in interns, this is, they should go to this website, right?
So if you will visit our website at www.isecus.org/UGA or email us at vpicx-uga@isecus.org.
Well, what an absolute delight to have you two come in. This is it's an inspiring story. It's a fantastic program. I just think the world of what you guys are doing, even to the extent that I think we've got some time set aside after the show. We're going to sit down and visit with these ladies, right?
Yeah, yes. Looking forward to it.
Fun Thank you stuff. So much for having us.
You are more than welcome. Can you hang out with us? We got one more guest we want to visit with.
Sure, sounds great.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio and bringing it all home for us this morning, Lee, is Mr. Rick Meekins. He is with, you have any idea how to pronounce this? Epiphany?
Epiphany. I'm going to try to say it phonetically. Am I in the ballpark, Rick?
Hey, Epiphany, yeah. You got it right.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we decided before we went on air that we know each other. We don't know if we serve time together, if you owe me money, or what the deal is. But anyway, we're delighted to have you. And you're a consultant, so I bet you've got some great advice for everybody in the room, right?
Sure.
Hey, we'll find out. So Epiphany, mission, purpose, what are you out there trying to do for folks?
Well, our goal is to help business leaders build extraordinary businesses, businesses that have foresight, sustainability. They're continuing to innovate. You know, it's just as part of what they do. And their goal is to leave a legacy, you know, make an impact, make a positive impact on their communities.
So how'd you fall into consulting? You couldn't hold a real job? Or what's the backstory? I mean, how does one become – I've always wondered this. How does one become a consultant? I mean, so give us the backstory on this.
Well, for me, my story was I've been a serial entrepreneur. I've, you know, started my first business probably around, you know, 14 years old. You know, had a little computer dating service and running around high school and trying to get people to sign up and give me money. It's like, hey, I've got matches for you. You know, 10 bucks
cool.
And you can get them.
That's great.
And then I guess later, before I started the company, my last business was a restaurant. I had a restaurant and a catering company. And, you know, we did decent. I found that the biggest issue that we had as a company is that me being a major producer in the restaurant, I found holes in operations. I knew what those holes were. You know, I knew how to go about filling those holes. But in terms of time and energy, I just could not get everything prioritized to be able to really do things the way that I want to. The way that I wanted to. So what I wanted to do is work with small business owners that had the same issue. You know, they may be creative, they may be good at, you know, selling or whatever it is, but the hole or the difficulty I see in a lot of businesses is that they're not always as efficient as they could be. They're not always thinking about, hey, you know what? What are we going to do in 3 years? What are we going to do in 5 years? How do we get there? What kind of resources and that sort of thing do we need? But at the same time, they have to realize, in my opinion anyway, they have to realize that they're part of a community. You know, they're looking to buy and sell goods, you know, with the community. They're looking to hire from the community. You know, so they've got to be good stewards of the community.
Now, do you find that operationally there's some problems in most businesses, that's something that they don't look at as really a core problem? They're so focused on selling, that maybe they're not looking at how the operation's running, that they kind of make some mistakes?
Yeah, I think that in the early phases of the business, a lot of times a business owner or business owners can do what they need to do, but it's not always done in a way that whatever it is they're doing can be passed on to someone else.
Right.
You know, so they get to a point where it's like, okay, you know, we've done all that we can do. You know, we've had fun with this, but we need to grow.
Right.
We need to be thinking about sustainability. We need to be thinking
so
about
now
hey,
that systems and processes have to now start to be taken seriously. It can't be just like you're doing every single function. You got to kind of get rid of, you got to fire yourself, right?
Exactly.
So, and the name, what's the story behind the name?
It was just an idea. It just came to me. It was,
it was an epiphany.
No, it was, It was just a thing with me. I had my last restaurant was called Petros. You know, I had that little Greek thing to it, and it really was for me an epiphany. It was like, you know, we can do this better. You know, there's no reason that we can't take, you know, what we do every day and figure out ways to do it better, to impact the community positively, and be able to build a sustainable lifestyle for ourselves.
Now, can you walk us through what an engagement looks like? Like, what's the pain one of your clients is typically having where they're like, you know, I better call Rick?
Many people start their engagement just by saying, hey, you know what, I've done all I can do. You know, I've got to get this thing better. I've got to get this thing organized. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, and a lot of times they know exactly what's not being done. You know, hey, I'm not taking care of my financials, or, you know, we haven't paid taxes in 5 years.
Do you see that a lot? Do you come across financial management like they're not on top of the books and stuff? Does that happen a lot?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, it does. It does.
You know, like, what do you mean? I take care of it. I have this box full of receipts and invoices.
Exactly. And that's what I get from the bookkeepers. The bookkeepers are like, well, I've got this box over here. We'll get to it eventually. Follow that extension.
So now, after you've kind of see what they're about and what their problems are, how do you work with them?
It's gonna depend on a couple of things. I mean, one thing that's very important to me is to come to business owners where they are. You know, I can't come into a company and you know, that's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 person shop, and, you know, have expectation for them that they've got no capabilities to be able to fulfill. You know, so what we have to do is look at the entire engagement, say, okay, this is where we are right now.
Right.
This is where we want to be. And we kind of take it slow. We actually use almost like a balanced scorecard approach, where we look at 4 critical areas of the business and say, okay, let's look at these individually.
Right.
You know, and let's figure out how to solve these problems and move the business forward.
And then hire an intern to fix them.
And then hire an intern to fix them.
What is balanced scorecard? What does that mean?
What it means is that you're looking at 4 different areas of the business, 4 specific areas that you're going to focus your energy on, and you're going to move. You're going to basically move the needle.
Is it the same 4?
No.
So it could be any 4.
Yes.
Like whatever the most pressing.
Correct. In my business, what we typically focus on is business development. We look at the products, you know, in terms of, you know, can we bring it to market a little bit less expensively? Can we, you know, expand that product offering? We might look at human resources, insourcing, outsourcing, hiring new people, and we look at financials, you know, how we're going to, you know, really the best use of cash, how we're going to leverage cash to accomplish our goals.
So now that we've had an 8 or 10 minute conversation, I understand you've got it going on, man. I think we could have a decent conversation about our business, that kind of thing. But otherwise, I might not have ever met you. How are you even going to market, getting on these people's radar, and getting a chance to have this kind of conversation?
You know what? I get referrals. I mean, a lot of business has been going through referrals. I've do a decent amount of writing, you know. You know, I publish on a few different e-magazine sites. We do a lot of work on LinkedIn.
Because trust and credibility in your world, that's everything,
that
right?
That is everything. I
mean, you got to get to know these people. Are not just going to open a kimono and show you everything about their business at first blush, right? Or from
exactly.
An email, right? Hey, can I be your consultant?
I got better luck, you know, trying to babysit their kids.
So it's heavily referral.
Yeah.
And is there anything you can do proactively, or you just have to just keep working on being the good, smart guy and build it and they come? Or,
you know, I guess one of the biggest things I have to do is I have to do everything I'm telling, you know, everyone else to do. You know,
got to eat your own cooking, right?
Exactly. I got to be visible. I've got to give back. I've got to interact with folks. You know, give them something. Give them value. You know what I mean? It's the education piece has been probably the largest impactor that I've used.
Now, you mentioned giving back. What are some of the ways that you counsel your clients to give back?
It's really dependent on the client. I do a lot of work with, I think about half of our work is done with nonprofit organizations, you know,
really?
Whether, yeah.
We're nonprofit, not on purpose. That's the first thing that we're going to have the intern do when she gets in town.
I should say not focused on profit organizations. about half of our work is focused on not-for-profit organizations. And so sometimes it's just a matter of saying, hey, you know what, we're doing this project. We could use, you know, your skills in this particular area.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's for a lot of business owners, I mean, it's baby steps. It's, you know, it's like, you know, stick your toe in the pool. You know, a lot of times once they've stuck their toe in the pool, if they find it doesn't hurt, you know, if they find it's a good experience, they want to do it again.
Right.
You know, but it's a matter of getting them to the edge of the pool.
This has got to be incredibly rewarding work. I mean, I think it might be frustrating because I wonder if sometimes you don't run into people that are a little hard-headed and they've always – is that – I see your eyebrow. I mean, because maybe some of your clients are small business, right?
Yeah.
Do you find them a little hard-headed maybe, right?
Oh, my clients are wonderful people.
But for the most part, particularly those that take your counsel, they really engage and follow some of your direction. You got to sleep really well at night. It's got to be fun work.
It is. It's really rewarding. It really is. I enjoy working with all of my clients. And yes, I mean, we absolutely do butt heads from time to time. I mean, they've got a particular vision of what they want to do. And sometimes getting to that place, you know, takes us through some difficulties. The vision's just a little bit different than what they had anticipated.
And you're telling them their baby's not ugly, but it could use a little cleaning up, right?
I'm not answering that.
Sweet spot do you have? Is it small business?
Is it nonprofits?
Verticals? Or? Nonprofits? Or?
It's. I guess if I were to say in my heart of hearts who I love to work with, I love to work with companies that are really passionate about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've worked with a number of marketing firms, production. I worked with a production house, bookkeeping. You know, people that are interested in making sure that whoever their client is better off as a result of working with them. So it parlays, you know, very, very easily into nonprofit organizations,
right?
Because that's the way that they are by nature. But, you know, in terms of funding my business, it doesn't always work.
Is it any size business? Is it like over $10 million in revenue? Is it $100 million? Is it a million?
The largest business we would work with is probably about $8 million in revenue. I look for companies that have been around for about 3 years, up to about 8 years. You know, it's given them some time to get their feet wet in the marketplace, you know, start to realize revenue, understand how they fit, understand how people are buying their products and services, and are ready to go to that next phase. I can't really put a bottom number, you know, on these sizes of companies. However, you know, we've got to feed the golden goose. I can't, you know, obviously we can't come in and, you know,
right, say, you're not starting with nothing.
Correct.
You gotta,
but I'll tell you, some of these not-for-profits have plenty of money to invest in things that are going to help them serve their community. So, there's good business in the nonprofit arena if you can genuinely serve them and help them accomplish their mission, can't you?
Oh, certainly. Oh, yeah. Certainly. Absolutely.
So I have two questions left. How do you think your logo would look on a parking lot pole?
Oh, fantastic.
How many interns would you like?
About 30.
See, I'm here. I'm working for all my guests.
That's it.
This is awesome.
Now, if somebody wants to learn more, the website?
The website is www.epiphany, spelled AEPIPHANNI.com.
Just the way it sounds.
Yeah, just the way it sounds.
All right. Well, thank you, and thanks to all of our guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and Kevin Finn. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.